8:30 a.m. KSTV Radio. This is Meet the People for July 9th, 2009. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning is State Senator Liesl McGuire. Senator McGuire chairs the Senate Energy Committee and is about to be named the president of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, a position which she will assume at the organization's 2009 summit scheduled to take place July 12th through the 16th at the Boise, Idaho Convention Center. Well, with that introduction, welcome to you, Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. I'm particularly interested in the role you will be playing in the Pacific Northwest Economic Region. Maybe you could start by telling us a bit about the organization and its mission.
Absolutely. PENWR was founded 20 years ago with an idea that the Pacific Northwest region was its own economic zone, if you will, having roughly 20% of the United States and Canada's gross domestic product coming out of this one region, rich in natural resources, certainly in hydrocarbon deposits and job growth. And so it was formed 20 years ago as a public-private partnership. It's unique that way. There are a lot of governmental organizations out there where lawmakers come together with other lawmakers to talk about trends in government and problems that need to be addressed. But what's nice about this group is it allows the private sector to be a part of those working groups so that the policies that you're looking at aren't made and reflected on in a vacuum. And so that makes it exciting. The other part about the group that is unique to it in the world is that it combines two nations in Canada and the United States. So equal number of members from the United States and from Canada, and it allows us, in particular for Alaska, it's a great opportunity to sit across from our neighbors in the Northwest Territories, in Alberta, Saskatchewan, to talk about cross-border issues, tourism. Certainly the gas line is a big focus, knowing that the natural gas pipeline will cross both of our nations. So the group is meets twice a year, but we have individual working groups that are going throughout the year to address areas, you know, certainly natural gas as a part of it, mining, job growth, renewable resources has been a big focus in the last decade, and sharing information about tidal and wind and how those work, trends within population growth and urban and rural divides that we all face. Aboriginal issues ends up being a focus as well, First Nation and Native issues. Many of the in fact, all of the members have, you know, those issues that crop up. Water rights, something that Alaskans haven't had to worry too much about, but there's a focus there as well. So that's the group, and it's exciting. I'll be the first woman president and only the second Alaskan.
Wow. Now, the group, as you say, is an international body of lawmakers and, I guess, folks from private enterprise, and includes people from Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana, and Canadian provinces of British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and the Yukon Territory. Now, as you mentioned, the major issue that is before you right now is the natural gas pipeline. And in a press release that your office issued on Monday, you described how you intend to advance the progress of an Alaska North Slope natural gas pipeline through the creation of the Northern Pipeline Coordinating Council. Why is it necessary to have yet still more bureaucratic oversight of this proposed project?
Well, that's a really good question, Cal. The goal of the Northern Pipeline Coordinating Council wouldn't be to create another layer of bureaucracy. We have enough of those layers to get through, you're right. But rather, the goal is to bring together members from each of the provinces for which the project will run through, along with the private sector partners in Denali and TransCanada, so that everybody has an opportunity to share information. So really, it's designed to be more of a clearinghouse and an opportunity to possibly break through problems that crop up across the border with permitting, misunderstandings that could easily develop between our two countries about the project, and so on. So it's really meant to be a facilitation as opposed to another layer of bureaucracy. We've already been doing it on an informal basis. And when I was in Ottawa a month ago, we arranged a group of representatives from Denali, the Denali plan, from TC Alaska. And that proposal, the Exxon announcement had not been made just yet, but rumors of it were abound. And then members of the government from Canada and from our side over here in Alaska. And boy, did we get an opportunity to uncover some really valuable information about what was happening in permitting. For example, the Denali folks were getting ready to proceed. Their equivalent, we have the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is a federal regulatory agency made up of five members appointed by the President of the United States, serving varying terms. They are the folks that will be issuing the permits and already are working with the potential project developers, okay? Mm-hmm. On the other side, you have the NEB, the National Energy Board, which is the Canadian equivalent, and they are working on the permitting part for the line as it moves across Canada once it reaches the Canadian border. And just in that one meeting alone, we were able to uncover that the Denali guys were proceeding through an alternate permitting process that the NEB was allowing. And that really piqued TransCanada's interest and it's certainly ours. And it also let us know that they were very serious about their proposal, you know, that they had already been working with the National Energy Board and were walking through those steps. We also got an opportunity to ask some real serious questions of the Canadian government about the Mackenzie Delta line and if that line were going to come through, how it would impact our pipeline coming out of Alaska. Would it be the kind of thing that would be a deal changer? And so that's the intent of the Coordinating Council, is to bring people together a few times a year to reflect on the progress of the pipeline and to misunderstandings. One other proactive part of the council that we're hoping to achieve is the idea of reciprocity that could be given for workers. We've already started with engineers, and we've made significant progress in getting our governments to recognize the licenses of engineers that would be working on the pipeline. We're hoping we can do the same with welders. There isn't a big enough workforce, frankly, you know, to take on a project of this magnitude without the combining of our workforces. And so we're hoping that the Coordination Council will help facilitate that.
I understand. Now, the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline, just to clarify a little bit for some of our listeners who might not be as up to date on these plans as you and I are, is a proposal to transport natural gas from the Alaska North Slope gas reserves to the Midwest in the United States. And there are two competing projects out there right now. One is by BP and ConocoPhillips, and that project is called Denali. And then the other project is proposed by TransCanada Corporation, and TransCanada and ExxonMobil have gotten together on this project proposal and have secured state seed money and a license from the state of Alaska to build and operate a pipeline. But they don't yet have the federal approvals needed to start construction. Now, Denali is spending its own money to move forward the project. Do you favor one project over the other?
Boy, first of all, I want to compliment you on your keen understanding of the proposals.
You're a great politician.
You're absolutely right. I mean, your listeners are fortunate to have you, because I can't tell you how many programs I've been on and a part of where there are just, you know, really important pieces of information that get left out. It's complex, and so I want to compliment you on that. You're absolutely right. It would take the FERC's approval, the federal government's final approval, to put that stamp on the beginnings of any real project going forward. I don't have a favorite. I've tried. I think it's really important for the government to be neutral. And as chair of the Energy Committee in the Senate, I think it's particularly important that I stay neutral. Our state is open for business. to all comers. And frankly, competition is welcome. And so I wouldn't want to make any kind of a statement that would favor one over the other. That said, certainly the AGEA process, which went forward, ended up picking a winner, if you will, in that process. And so you're right, there's state money that's coming forward for the TC Alaska project, which I think gives it a little bit of a leg up in terms of reimbursements. But in the end, the final thing that's going to make the difference will be who makes those firm transportation commitments this coming spring. They'll open up the offers for that in May of 2010. The open season will continue on through July 31st of 2010, and whichever of the producers makes those firm transportation commitments, they're free to bid on either of those particular projects, and I think the one that gets the secure FTs is going to be the one that wins. It's going to be an interesting process to watch now that our governor has sort of left the command post there. I know that she was a part of the negotiations and bringing Exxon in. What that has changed for Exxon, we don't know yet. We're hoping to hold hearings here again this interim to get to relook at the situation and see if anything's changed for them. But I think ultimately it's good for Alaska that we have competition, and exciting that you've got so many people interested in a project of this magnitude.
Well, it's refreshing to hear you say that we're open for business. I like that turn of phrase. Curious, you've been in the state legislature for some time. You were elected 3 times to the state house and then in 2006 to the state senate. And you're a Republican, so why would you support a plan that would use public money for a project that private enterprise is perfectly willing to fund?
Well, and that's a great question. I mean, ultimately, I voted against. I was one of the few people in the Senate and the House that voted against awarding the contract to TC Alaska. And I spoke on the floor, alluding to the comments that you made. I mean, I did not support the project getting $500 million. I really did truly feel that oil was going to go down. It was at $145 roughly that day, and part of my remarks were reminding Alaskans, you know, that when I started serving 9 years ago, oil was at $11 a barrel, and that kind of a thing could happen very quickly, and $500 million ends up looking like a lot of money. It's a lot of schools. It's a lot of roads. And certainly, sure enough, it went down to 30, and then now we're at $60 today. So those fears proved out. I also was very uncomfortable with the idea of the state picking a winner. I voted for the original statutory change to move forward with an AGEA with an eye. Most of us did, 59 of us did, because I thought, you know, if it's this mechanism that the governor believes will secure gas line negotiations, then who am I to judge what tools go in the tool belt? Much like I voted for the Stranded Gas Development Act for Murkowski. But I was shocked when only one applicant came forward, and I was shocked at the steering by this administration. I really feel steering is the appropriate term. I had serious concerns about it. I voted against it. I felt with the private sector willing to step up, it ought to be the kind of thing that's decided by the invisible hand in the marketplace. But here we are. And so that vote was made in the Democratic process. The vote was in favor of TransCanada receiving that exclusive contract, and now we're stuck with it. I think you can expect to see changes to AGEA and to that contract, especially now that the governor is no longer at the helm. There are a lot of lawmakers that continue to have concerns about it, particularly the reimbursement structure. And now that you look at a company, the largest company, the most profitable company in the world, looking at receiving reimbursements, boy, it doesn't sit right with a lot of people.
I can understand that, and it doesn't sit right with me either, and I think a lot of the folks out here would think the same. If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, I'm talking with State Senator Liesl McGuire on Meet the People this morning. I'm Kels Hetherington. Now, Senator, large natural gas reserves were discovered in Prudhoe Bay in 1967. or this is according to Wikipedia, and talk of a pipeline peaked during the 1973 OPEC oil embargo, and several companies came out in favor of pipeline projects. Among them was TransCanada. Do you think that the market could play the same role again and make this natural gas pipeline project uninteresting?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always room for those kinds of things to happen. And that's why I'm real careful when people ask me, you know, to look into a crystal ball and tell them when the gas pipeline will come online, come into fruition, and who will be the participants and so on. I mean, I think there is a whole lot of room out there. I think there's keen federal government interest in the way that there was with the Trans-Alaska pipeline. I think you see, for interests of national security and energy independence, I think there's probably more room to see where they end up acting. If you recall, Senator Ted Stevens really stepped up to the plate in a leadership role back then to put some incentives in place and to put some legislation in place that didn't allow for any litigation to go forward, as one example. So I think there's still time there. I think there's a lot of room for the companies themselves to reflect on the marketplace and to decide whether or not it's still viable. So I think all those considerations are out there. I mean, it's massive. Of course, it will be the largest infrastructure project North America has ever seen, 1,800 miles of pipe, and, you know, a price tag that continues to rise up with all kinds of economic uncertainties. One of the things I think that the Alaska legislature has a very large role in, number one, is continuing to shepherd over the projects themselves, to encourage the private sector to remain at the table and negotiate. But certainly in the area of fiscal terms, I think you're going to see this discussion come up over and over again starting in January. And that's one place that a sovereign government really can be a part of a project by reducing the amount of government take that we have to interject some economic certainty into the project. So I want to throw out that for your listeners as well. Alaskans will be invited to be a part of those conversations. How long is it appropriate to lock in a rate for government taxation on natural gas? Clearly, the producers are looking to us for, you know, as much as 30 years. AGEA gives 10. What's the appropriate government take, and are we willing to offer the kind of incentive that might tip the project over into the success category?
Focusing again on the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, which you are going to be named the president of in the upcoming summit that the organization is holding in Boise, Idaho. Let me ask, what are the other priorities that you see as wanting to advance during your term as president?
Well, it's a great question. Overarching for me is always, when I have become, I was a chair of Council of State Governments West a year and a half ago. Anytime I take on a national post as an Alaskan, my number one goal, quite frankly and unabashedly, is to raise awareness and interest in our state and the kinds of things that we can do as Alaskans and bring to the table. But more specifically, the Natural Gas Pipeline Coordination Council and the ability to work with our neighbors in Canada. We are also creating an Arctic committee to look at the issues that are impacting the Arctic. PENWR and no other organization have formed anything like it. There are circumpolar working groups out there at the national level, but nothing like that at the state government level. We think it's important now, particularly that Northwest Territories has accepted my invitation to join. They'll become a member here next week officially. So you'll have Yukon, Northwest Territories, and Alaska uniquely as members of PENWR and members now of this newly started Arctic Committee. we're hoping that that's a place, again, where we can reflect on issues of outer continental shelf drilling, how to balance that with whale migration and the kinds of things that come out with Aboriginal issues. There's the whole issue of the border management itself. I mean, if you recall last summer, we had a cruise ship come in from Europe. They pulled up into Barrow and then down into Point Hope, came up off the dock and began collecting up ancient native artifacts and putting them in their pockets. There was no border clearance. There was no guidelines or instructions for folks coming off about native artifacts and so on. So we've got our work cut out for us there, and I think that's going to be a really important part of what we do here in the next year. And then finally, one of the big things that we're taking on is the idea of a secure grid, energy grid for our region. Alaska has its work cut out for us. As you know, the last 2 days we've been meeting to look at, in the rail belt, bringing together the six utilities that we have just to try and complete our grid. We have gaps in transmission lines in our own rail belt. We don't have redundancy and backup. Certainly, Western Alaska is held hostage every day to diesel and all of the problems that we know are there. But we're looking at the broader goal of bringing the region together as an economic force, frankly, and also for security reasons. Mm. Where are the backups that we can provide for one another in the event of some kind of terrorist activity or natural disaster? What can we do as a region to have more integration? And part of the reason that we're going to focus on that is the fact that there is a renewed focus at the federal government level. There'll be stimulus money that comes out to build smart gridding and smart transmission lines. And so we want to take advantage of that. Mm. PENWAR has been particularly keen on taking the initiative to snatch up that federal grant and incentive money and apply it to our region in the renewable energies area as well. And that will continue to be a focus, how to get more renewable energy companies to invest in Alaska, to invest in our region. And frankly, renewable energy in and of itself is clearly not the pathway to energy independence yet. I mean, mm-hmm. we understand that natural gas is that. But the jobs that sector bring to our region already are immense. And so we're hoping to grow the attraction of those companies and the jobs that they create for the rest of our region.
Just two final questions in our final moments on Meet the People with Senator McGuire. Senator, I'm curious, I hear you talk about getting stimulus money to come to this region. Governor Sarah Palin rejected about $27 million in stimulus money for energy projects. And she said she did that because there were strings attached and it would put the state into some debt and it would have to be repaid. Are those issues that bother you, and are they ones that you also agree with, or do you differ on her position?
Yeah, we differ. I've been very publicly open about the fact that I disagree with that assessment. Our office has spent time, along with Mike Hawker's office and Larry Pursley, talking with the Department of Energy at every turn in course of, as these issues have arisen, about potential strings. And we have built a real healthy record and docket of all of the answers back from the Department of Energy on that. One of the biggest concerns that the governor had was this notion that we would be required to adopt a federal standard of energy codes that might be onerous. And so we have an exemption that's specific to communities under 2,500, and then an analysis that shows that most of our communities are already superseding those guidelines, and the ones that don't, by 2016, are willing and ready and able to meet those guidelines. And frankly, again, it's not so much about federal governmental guidelines in a vacuum. It's drilling down to look at, you want efficient building standards so that you can conserve energy. That's one of our pathways to energy independence as Alaskans. So, no, I am not concerned about it. I continue to have the open dialogue with the Department of Energy to be reassured I think the veto override will carry. We're talking in these last couple days, just recent breaking news, we're trying to arrange for a special session, likely in August, where we would address these confirmations and do the veto override. The votes are there, and I think the $28.6 million will be a welcome relief for energy programs here in the state of Alaska.
Well, thanks for correcting me. I thought it was 27. You say it's 28.6, so good to have that number corrected. Also, final question for you. I know you've heard this question probably a lot from the media, and it's become like the Michael Jackson news. What do you make of Governor Sarah Palin's resignation on Friday?
Well, you know, I think it's disappointing. I mean, I have to say that, particularly as a young woman that has, you know, lived my life in the state and always looked to the day that there would be a first female governor. I have to be very frank about that. I don't like quitting. I've had my own challenges politically, and certainly those that I have served with over the last decade have had those. And politics is a difficult it's difficult. It can be a blood sport. There's no question about it. But if you take on a commitment to lead, you have to follow through. And even on those dark, tough days, you've got to reach down inside with everything that you have and rise back up and lead. We're at a critical crossroads in our state with the gas line announcement, with the fact that we're down to $60 a barrel oil, with the $2.1 billion deficit that we faced this last year. No, it's not going to be an easy year and a half remaining in her term, but that's precisely the time that you lead. And so I'm disappointed in the decision and don't feel that there was an adequate reason given. If there were a health problem in her family unit, terminal illness or those kinds of things, obviously you have to respect those kinds of things that happen. But in this instance, I don't feel there was adequate reason given, and I don't like quitters, and I'm disappointed that it happened on the watch of the first female governor.
Mm. Senator Liesl McGuire, thank you for coming on Meet the People this morning and talking with the folks in Sandpoint and King Cove. We want to have you back sometime in the not-too-distant future to talk more about energy policy and what you're doing with the Pacific Northwest Economic Region as the president.
I would enjoy it. Thank you so much for having me. I'd be happy to come back on anytime.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
That was, as we said, Senator Liesl McGuire. She represents a district in Anchorage, and she's a Republican in the state legislature in the Senate. She was in the state house before that. Well, that is Meet the People for today. Tomorrow I'm going to have Ike Eichard on from the Kodiak Kenai Cable Company to talk about the company's project to develop a high-speed internet access line to places like Sandpoint and King Cove in Unalaska. Join me tomorrow at 11:30 for that very interesting interview. Now we'll go to weather and then back to the most music in Sandpoint, right here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP, Sandpoint, Alaska.
You're listening to KSDP, Sandpoint, and K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.